Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Better Lawns and Gardens from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm a horticulturist, landscape designer, garden author. I just stay busy in the garden. I love helping people with their gardens, and this is a great hour for you to get your gardening questions answered. As always, you can call 1-888-455-2967, or you can text your gardening question, like Nancy in Merritt Island. We'll get to hers. Text us 23680. Good morning, Lizzie.
Good morning. I'm excited about the dirty word of the day.
The dirty word of the day is wonderful. Let's hear the music. There you go.
Now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day is semelparity. S-E-M-E-L-P-A-R-I-T-Y. Semelparity. Semelparity is a reproductive strategy available to living organisms, including plants. A species is semelparous if it is characterized by a single, one-time reproductive episode before death. Some botanies use the parallel terms monocarpy and polycarpy. In truly semelparous species, death after fruiting is part of an overall strategy that includes putting all its available resources into maximizing reproduction at the expense of future life. This distinction is also related to the difference between annuals and perennial plants. An annual is a plant that completes its life cycle in a single season and is usually semelparous. The word semelparity was coined by evolutionary biologist Lamont Cole in 1954 and comes from the Latin semel, meaning once, a single time, and perio, to beget. Semelparity is also known as the Big Bang reproduction, since the single reproductive event of semelparous organisms is usually large as well as fatal. Annual plants, including all grains of crops like corn, wheat, rice, and most domestic vegetables, are semelparous. Long-lived semelparous plants include bromeliads, century plant or agaves, Lobelia tellicae, which is a succulent, and other succulents like Semper Vivum and Aeonium, and some species of bamboo. So the dirty word of the day is semelparity. On a Facebook page at the end of the year, I'm going to put a whole graphic of all of the dirty words, and you'll see that post. And so if you go to your Facebook page, please like us. Give us 5 stars. We would love that. I have a goal of trying to add on to our likes, and you can really help me out by that, by just liking the page. We would love for you to do that. And so 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. We have the amazing Renee Wilson coming up, and she has such a great background in environments, and we have such a fun event. She's going to be talking to us about that. Also, too, if you'd like to get the newsletter is out. You can go to SHE-consulting.com. And you can sign up for the newsletter. Just put in your name and your zip code. And I do not spam. You do not get sold. You are mine, totally, totally protected. And it comes out once a month. And it'll tell you what to do each month. Gives you my landscape malpractice, how to know when to fire your landscaper, and my design tips, and Lizzie's garden adventures, and my plant of the month. Lots of different things there. And you can also find out my art and bloom garden tours, too, as well. Yes. Have some great trips. One is the Revolutionary Garden Tour, which we're celebrating the 250th birthday of the United States. And we're going to go to all the famous founding fathers' gardens, plus gardens of homes in Colonial Williamsburg and in Virginia that are over 200 years old. And they are just going to have a one-time event. This is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime garden tour.
Yes.
And we're looking forward to that. If you'd like to go, we will just love having you. And you can go to artandbloomgardentours.com. live.com.
Yes.
Or email me.
Yes.
Teresa.Watkins@live.com.
And if you find out that there is a waiting list.
There is waiting list.
Yes. Then still go ahead and sign up for it. So this way you'll be ready. You'll know the cost and how to, you know, prepare for it. Because some of these you actually need passports for.
You do need passports for the Buffalo Garden Walk Tour, which is one of the most amazing garden trips ever. It just is phenomenal. I mean, we go to Canada there. The Chelsea Show should be on every gardener's bouquet list, or as Tom McCubbin says, bucket list.
He corrected you so hard yesterday.
He did. He said it's just bucket. I go, no, you pronounce a bouquet, Tom. And so it's those are great trips. We also are going to the Newport Flower Show and Martha's Vineyard, and then also to the Brandywine Valley, where we will get to go to wonderful private gardens and visit with Frederick Law Olmsted and some palatial estates. And then we're going to France next year, too, as well.
I'm so excited.
There you go.
Lots of pastries, right?
That's it. And so we have Renee Wilson coming up with the Audubon Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary. I'm looking forward to talking with her. Stay tuned. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. Renee Wilson became part of the Audubon Florida team in May 2019. She serves as a senior communications coordinator and acts as a media liaison for Audubon's Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary. She works with media outlets to highlight the sanctuary's research, stewardship, and educational initiatives. She brings extensive experience from her previous roles with environmental organizations such as the University of Florida's Florida Master Naturalist Program. She is a teacher there, and she enjoys living in Southwest Florida, where she pursues her passions for nature photography, boating, snorkeling, and most notably, bird watching. Good morning, Renee. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Good morning, Teresa. Great to be here with you this morning on a chilly morning in Naples.
That is what I'm so glad it's chilly there. That's nice. Well, sometimes, right? So Renee, what is the Audubon Christmas bird count?
It is an annual worldwide census of birds. It lasts for the last few weeks of January through early, last few weeks of December through early January. And volunteers and staff with the National Audubon Society and partnering organizations get together. They organize around predetermined count circles to count all of the birds that they see or hear within this time period to get a comprehensive estimate of bird populations and trends.
That's wonderful. I like that idea. So why is that important for Christmas, to count the birds during this time of the year?
Well, they're compiled into annual report that informs scientists, land managers, and others working to protect the species and locations that are most threatened. You know, biologists can't be everywhere at once, so community scientists, like volunteers, can really help add information to what we already know about birds and their decline. As you might be aware, bird populations are declining worldwide. In fact, in North America, we've lost nearly 3 billion birds just in my lifetime.
Wow. That's incredible. So, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. But counts like this and others, they help scientists understand the trends So that Audubon can do a better job of helping bend that bird curve and hopefully flatten it out so we don't lose 3 billion more in the next lifetime.
That is so important. Okay, well, that makes a big difference there. So Renee, how did you get interested in bird watching?
Well, I got interested in birds as a child. My mother, when I was growing up, I spent my winters in southern Vermont. And I remember how excited my mother got when she noticed a flock of evening grosbeaks decorating a tree outside our window like Christmas ornaments.
Uh-huh.
I learned later why that was pretty special, because I don't get to see them at all in Florida. But I have fond memories also of the bird feeders and suet feeders my parents would put up outside the windows. And everything was covered with inches and inches of snow. Chickadees and nuthatches and woodpeckers would be right outside my window getting their breakfast while I was staying warm inside.
It is a wonderful memory. When we go up to Boston to visit Tony's family, his mother has a bird feeder outside, and it's just incredible to see the snow, just little flakes coming down, and the warm fence has a little bit of white snow on it, and the bird feeders and the birds come like crazy, and there's like 10 of them, 15 of them on it at one time, especially the suet feeder. So it is a wonderful memory. So that I can really relate to that. That is wonderful. And so tell us, when is what are the days for the Christmas bird count?
So officially it runs the 14th of December through the 6th of January, and the days are spread out, but the regions all count on the same day, so that we don't want people double counting the same bird that might be in one region one day and then it's moved somewhere else. So basically the counts are different days depending on where you're located. Count compilers pick the date, and there's a very distinguished circle a radius around a large region where all the volunteers in that section are tasked with covering the area from sunrise to sunset, even later. A lot of people also will go out at night on that day to also look for owls. And so it's pretty much like it could almost be a 24-hour day if you want. But
wow,
most people
activity.
Put in about 8 hours, get out bright and early, and you're in your predetermined count circle, typically in a small group. And you're counting every bird that you see or hear during that time period in that specific location.
That is really great. So can anyone join in and participate?
So, yes, typically the bird counts need more help because, the circles are large, and the more ears and eyes you have on a large location, the better. Many of the counts are open and welcome to birders of any skill level. As I mentioned, it's good, we often have a small group of people that cover a section, and usually there's one or two very experienced birders, and then they'll bring along a couple of other folks that might not have as much experience, and it is a great learning opportunity for those folks. And it's a great way to just get to know the habitats that the birds are using and learn more about how these birds make their living and really pay more attention to them throughout the year once you become hooked.
Wow, that's great. And so this is a great family event, isn't it? Can children, or what age do you need to be to participate?
I'm not sure if there's a minimum age. Each count circle compiler might have their own guidelines. Birders as young as six, if you can hold some binoculars, you can even help or just be exposed to it. But it's very important that you're registered and your compiler knows of who's in your party, mm-hmm. and can group you with the appropriate leader if you're not leading the count yourself.
Can they participate at home?
Yeah, actually, it is possible to, if you live in a count circle, you can contribute by doing a feeder watch right from your own backyard. You can participate without committing to a full day out in the field, but you do still need to register in that location to be able to submit your data.
Okay, so how do they know what to do and find out how to do it?
So the National Audubon Society has a hub at audubon.org/CBC, short for Christmas Bird Count. There you'll find a big map with dots all over the map that you can zoom in and see which count circle is in your area. And when you click on the button, it'll open up a window with the contact information for the count circle compiler. It'll also say, is this count open for volunteers? Maybe it's already full. So it's just important to realize that in many, many locations, there are annual counters who keep coming back year after year. And there may be, you know, some spots might have more of a need and others have less, depending on the actions of those, you know, the volunteers that are participating.
Wonderful. So what kind of birds will they people be able to see?
Well, in the 2024 count, there were six species that were counted at all 80 count circles in the state of Florida. They included great blue heron, great egret, belted kingfisher, American kestrel, gray catbird, and palm warbler.
Ah. Now, will flamingos, do you think, be on the list this year?
Well, that sure would be a great addition to the Christmas bird count. I'm going to guess that some lucky counters may be able to spot flamingos if they're in the right place at the right time. We know those birds move around quite a bit. Probably the most likely locations to spot them would be in the more southern regions of Florida this time of year, around Miami. In fact, the Tropical Audubon Society is hosting a count next week, and they might be the location where a flamingo could be spotted. Just depends on if you're in the right habitat. You know, flamingos have very specific habitat needs. So if you happen to be in a coastal area with a shallow, you know, marsh, that maybe you'll get lucky.
That would be wonderful. It always thrills me to see roseate spoonbills just out in the wild, and now with flamingos, and I love wood storks. So I put on brakes when I see wood storks. So that
they are definitely very a memorable sighting for sure. They're so stately and large; they're hard to miss.
They are. They really are. And I love seeing them with the snowy egrets and the great blue herons, and they're all just sitting there together. So there's a lot of great preserves that you can go see birding all year round. So where can people where they'll be able to see the results, and can they see the results from past bird counts?
Well, the results typically take many months to compile. I literally just found the summary from last year's Florida count on Audubon's website. If you go to audubon.org, the news section, there is it's the 125th bird count in Florida. In fact, this year is the 126th time that this event has taken place.
That's
every year.
That's wonderful.
1900.
That is so great. And I bet that was important to help protect the birds environmentally. And
absolutely. It was intended as an alternative to an even older tradition called the Christmas side hunt, where people would all go out and see who could shoot the most birds. Now we go out and see who can count the most birds.
That is great. That's a great turnaround. Okay, so tell us about, real quick, we just got about a minute, the Audubon Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary. Tell us about that.
Sure. It's located in Naples, just about 15 miles east of I-75. Audubon has been protecting this site for more than 70 years, and it has a beautiful boardwalk that's 2.25 miles through four different habitats, and it's open every day of the year, even on Christmas. So anybody can visit. It's a $17 entry fee because the sanctuary protects 13,000 acres of wetlands and other habitats right here in Collier County. The birding is fantastic. And in fact, just yesterday I was there and there were a bunch of birders in the parking lot with their long lenses looking at a Western tanager.
Oh, that's exciting. Thank you so much, Renee, for coming on. Please come back and let us know how it is in a couple of months. Let me know when you get the results, and I'd love to have you back on. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
All right, Teresa. Thank you for having me. And audubon.org/corkscrew is how to find our boardwalk.
Wonderful. That is really great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. That's a great event. It's just wonderful to just even notice the birds in your neighborhood or join join your local Audubon Society or your local bird watching society club in the area. So we do appreciate Renee Wilson coming. And it is a wonderful traditional Christmas event. So for your family to do, so we do appreciate it. We're going to take a break right now. It's a perfect time to call or call back with your gardening questions. We've had a lot of callers during then. Just dial 1-888-455-2967. Text 23680. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. We'd love to have your phone call, your gardening questions. You can try and let me know what your favorite Christmas carol that mentions plants is. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. We've got some wonderful text messages that I'm going to get to right now. Let's go to Eileen in Polk County. Eileen is a frequent caller and a fan. Thank you so much for being out there. Thank you for the Christmas card, Eileen.
Oh, you are so welcome. Ask Lizzie what she did with mine.
Okay,
it's somewhere in the trash of her stuff.
No. Okay, so I have this bad habit of during this time of year, we use my truck quite often, so I have to quickly grab everything in my truck and kind of move it out so we have room for everybody to sit in my truck.
Uh-huh.
So it happens to be that it was the same day that we got Eileen's Christmas cards, and I was like, oh, here's the one for Teresa. So I put it up on my dash so I wouldn't lose it. I grabbed everything else, and it either got moved to the bed of my truck or in the living room somewhere. So, but it will be found.
There you go. Eileen, I will make her find it. Okay. So,
hey,
so how can I help you?
I have two questions
sure.
for you. We have two sets of bluebirds.
Oh, wonderful.
So we need to put up the other bird feeder, the other bird house.
Yes.
So how far apart do they need to be?
Okay, so how much property do you have, Eileen?
I have an acre and a half.
Okay, I would say 40 to 50 feet apart.
Oh, geez, okay.
Okay.
We're not going to see it in the front yard then.
No, but can you just put it like, how far away are they from your front yard, in your front yard, the first one?
One of mine is right in front of the screened-in porch.
Uh-huh.
And my screened-in porch is 12 by 24.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, yeah, I would still say a good 40 feet. I mean,
okay. You
want to give them access, but so that they're not stressed, you know.
Okay.
I wouldn't put them side by side.
No, I know. I can't do that. But I also wanted to tell you that I finally planted my luscious lavender.
Oh, your phenomenal lavender. That's wonderful. My How's it doing?
Yeah, my phenomenal lavender. And it's in a big barrel pot. And how she told me not to overwater it.
Right.
So when do I know it needs water?
Okay, so what kind of pot is it in? Are you putting it in the ground?
No, not in the ground.
Okay.
She said I can leave it on the screened-in porch as long as it gets sun.
Yes.
Which does. The big barrel pot, God, it's got to be a 20-gallon pot.
Okay, so that's a good size. So go ahead, and I would just, just do a little dowel and put it in the ground and go down about 4 to 5 inches where the roots are. And then I would just once a week lift it up and see how wet it is. And then go ahead and water, water once a week, especially if the temperatures stay up in the 70s. But then if it gets down in the 30s and 40s, you don't need to water as much. But I would just put a dowel in there, something that you can check the water down in the root system, and leave it in there, water it, get it soaked, and then just pull it out occasionally. Maybe put your fingers in the soil. If it's dry, you want to water it. It doesn't like a lot of water, but consistent water it.
But with that big pot, I mean, just put a dowel in there.
You know... I would put it like about 4 inches away so you can get the root system. It's going to have, what was it, a 1 gallon or a 3 gallon when you planted it?
Oh, no. It's like a 50-gallon pot, and it's in one of those big barrel pots.
No, no, no. What I mean, when you bought the plant.
Oh, no. They were in little containers.
Little containers, so they're like a 2 gallon pot, 4 inch plant.
It was a 4 inch plant.
Okay, so you don't. So then that size, I would go ahead and just use your fingers, and
gotcha.
just reach down about 3 to 4 inches away, see how dry the soil is, and water it just once a week if necessary.
Yeah, because I put it in the black cow.
Yes, it's not going to need that much water.
Okay.
Okay.
Gotcha.
All right, hon.
Much, and thank you for the newsletter. I have not gotten to it yet, but I will this weekend.
All right, you'll be tested on it. All right, Eileen, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. I love Eileen. Let's go to Dick in Polk City. Good morning, Dick. How can I help you?
Good morning. I love your program.
Thank you so much.
I have 2.5. I live in Polk City. I have 2.5 acres. I have Bahia grass, and uh-huh. I always had a nice yard, but the last couple of years I'm overrun with weeds. I'm told to spray it with 2,4-D, and I don't want to hurt what the hay I have.
Uh-huh.
But when do I spray it, and should I spray it twice?
Okay, so what you want to do is you want to spray it when the bahia is growing, and right now bahia is going into the dormant season if it's not already dormant. Okay, so you want to spray it in probably April and May. Okay, and follow the instructions. It will tell you if you need to reapply it, how long to wait in between on the label.
Okay,
you just apply it when it gets 2,4-D. The plant has to be growing. The grass has to be growing, and right now they're going dormant, so it won't help.
Okay, I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
And a little information. A lot of people don't know you can grow tomatoes 12 months out of the year in Florida. I'm an old Floridian.
Uh-huh.
I've got a tomato plant right now. It's in a pot. It's got a false bottom of water, and it drinks a lot of water. I have a grape tomato right now, the cherry tomatoes.
Yes.
And it's going above the eave of my house.
That's amazing.
And, it has probably 17, 18 pods of 8, 10, 12 tomatoes in each bunch. Right now, I'm standing here looking at it.
I would love to see a picture, Dick. That is great. It's probably an Everglades tomato. Do you know what variety it is?
I'm looking at the tag, and it just says Grape T-A-M-I.
T-A-M-I. Great Tammy. Okay, I'll look that up, but I would love to see a photograph. You can send it to me. We would love to see that. Thank you so much. We've got calls from Bill in Orlando and Gary in Geneva and lots of text messages. We're going to get to you. Thank you so much. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. I'm Teresa Watkins. This is from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios and Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. We just have a few minutes and we have some wonderful phone calls coming up. Let's go to Bill in Orlando. Good morning, Bill. How can I help you?
We're going to replace our zoysia lawn in the spring. I think that's probably the best time. See, there's a lot of varieties out there. I saw one called Palisades. Haven't heard of that one. But I wanted to get your thoughts on what variety is more preferable for Central Florida.
Well, you know, Palisades is a good choice. I also like if you have a little bit of shade. What kind of sunlight do you have, full sun or shade?
Full sun, but in the back we have shade, which I know there's probably not enough sun for zoysia there.
Well, I would look at Citra Blue. Okay, it grows lovely in the shade, and it will also take full sun.
And that's a zoysia also?
It is a zoysia also.
Okay, I haven't heard of that one.
Okay, check out Citra Blue, and Sod Solutions has it on there. It's a Sod Solutions grass, and you can look at the information on their website, sodsolutions.com.
All right.
Okay?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Bill. I appreciate it. It's one of my favorite grasses. Let's go to Gary in Geneva. Good morning, Gary. How can I help you?
Good morning. Teresa, I've lived in a house that I had built in the middle of the woods. I had built it 28 years ago.
Wow.
At the time, I put down a pine bark yard around it. I wanted to keep it very natural and keep the woods fairly close to the house. Over the years, after 28 years, the pine bark is not in real good shape, but my weeds are in pretty, really good shape. What I want to do is take it back to the pine bark situation. I don't want to use herbicides.
Okay.
And I talked to friends, and they said, well, put down tarps, you know, and leave them down 3 months and so forth. That could take, you know, a year doing it bit by bit. So anyway, I'll shut up and ask you what, give me some advice.
Okay, well, I would not put anything down on it. You don't want to put cardboard. You don't want to put tarps. You don't want to put anything down to cover and smother the weeds, because you're also killing the ground underneath it because it can't breathe. Soil needs to be aerated. Okay, so you can, what you can do is put another layer of mulch on it, 3 to 4 inches. And what I would do is I would either hand pull or whack them down to where they're just on the ground, and then apply another 3 to 4 inches of mulch on top of it, and that will take care of it.
Okay, say that again now. Put down 3 to 4 inches right on top of the weeds and everything?
Right. So what I want you to do is that I want you to whack them down so they're kind of like at the level of the ground.
Yeah, mow it first.
Mow it first. And then put another 3, and I would even say you could put 5 to 6 inches down, and that will keep the weeds from coming through for another couple of years.
Now, when you say mulch, what, like get a somebody to come in and spray it on, or I'm trying to think.
Yeah, you could just have somebody apply it all the way around. I mean, it's something that you can do by the bag. If you want to do hand manually, you know, that's something that you can do. And you can also have a mulch company come in, and they will, you know, they have equipment that they can spray it down. But I just think the most inexpensive way to do it is make sure all the weeds are down to the ground level, and then put, you can put 5 to 6 inches, and that's going to stop the weeds from growing.
Okay, fine. Mulch companies, would that be like, what would I look for online, landscape companies?
No,
or?
Well, you could do landscape, okay? You can do landscape, but I would just contact the mulch companies directly. And so
are
if
they
you
called
put
mulch, I mean, just look up mulch online.
Look up mulch online and put in Geneva or your zip code, and then contact them. They can either do it or they'll know someone who will do it. Landscape companies tend to be very expensive.
Well, so, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
That's why I had.
Right. But mulch companies will have some, and it's not going to be cheap either, but it'll be done one time, and it'll get what you want.
Okay. One last quick question.
Sure.
What will the mulch be like?
It depends on what mulch you want. So you can get pine bark, small chips.
Well, you mean go ahead and put down the pine bark? Okay.
Yes.
I'm
sorry. Yeah. No, go ahead.
That's what I want is pine bark. I want the end product. Okay.
Right.
Now I understand.
They carry all kinds of mulches. And that and they're usually wholesale, but there are some that will have, you know, you can go and buy it direct.
Okay, great.
Okay,
thank
rather
so
than buying it by the bag.
And, love your show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Gary. Let me know how you do. Let's go to Michael in Melbourne. Good morning, Michael. How can I help you?
Good morning, dear. I wanted to let everybody know I'm old-fashioned, so very Merry Christmas, and please make it safe. The holidays, but Christmas is very special, and thank you. Teresa, almost all the time, almost every show, somebody sort of not up on it like me calls about watering and how much water to put on, whether it's your yard or whether it's your plants. I have avocado seedlings that are like 3 feet, and I've heard you say stick your finger in it and, you know, see how moist. Well, I've got a little bit of brown on the tips of some of the leaves, so I don't know if I'm overwatering or underwatering, and I thought maybe you could tell me, like, a machine, an instrument or something that you could get to do that. And then the second thing, my seeds this year have roots on them. They're in plastic clear water, and they have roots on them, but I don't have any anything coming out the top. I don't know. They're retarded.
No, okay, so one, you can buy soil moisture meters. that will tell you how wet the soil is, okay? And if you wait till this afternoon, I will post articles or some sources so that you can look at the different soil moisture meters and select one, okay? And I'll post
that. That'll sure help a lot.
I'll put it on your Facebook, okay? And then our Facebook page. But then your seedlings. Well, your seedlings only are in water, so they're only going to grow roots. It's going to be a little bit longer for them to grow the leaves. So they're trying to survive, and so the roots are the most important thing. So I would actually, if they have roots, how long are the roots?
Probably 3 to 4 inches, and some of them have like 4 or 5 roots, and some of them have 2 roots. So
okay, I would go ahead and put them.
I mean, they're growing.
Yeah, I would put the ones that have 4 to 5 inches. Go ahead and put them in soil, and just go ahead and pot them up. Okay, and let the other ones. I think they'll be fine if you put them in the soil if they have 2 roots or 5. And go ahead.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Michael. Merry Christmas, hon. Appreciate it. Let's see if we can get through these text messages. We've had them. They've been very patient. Okay, so Lori in St. Cloud says, should I fertilize my in-ground mums that are blooming this year? I don't know if I answered this in the first hour, so we're going to do it again. Yes, you can go ahead and fertilize now. You can use a slow-release fertilizer or a little bit diluted liquid fertilizer. That would be just fine. Okay. Good morning. Merry Christmas. I'm wondering your thoughts on the new color hosta I'm seeing advertised blue and rainbow and red. Are they worth the money? And will they survive in Florida? Nancy, she's in Merritt Island. God bless you, hon. But this is an example of AI. There are no such things as a rainbow hosta or a red or a blue hosta. Those photos that you're seeing are AI.
Yeah, fake.
They are fake, yes. And so I don't know of any, and don't buy them, okay? You're not going to, you're going to waste your money, and it's a kind of a scam. So red and blue and rainbow hostas exist only in artificial intelligence and in other worldly worlds. So save your money, hon. Thank you. The sun hostas are great. They grow here in Florida, and they do very well. Sun hostas. I love using them. Ken in Northwest Orlando says his lawn is more weeds than grass. What can I do to restore? I'm not in favor of all new sod, and it's now a good time or better to wait until cold passes in February. One, it depends on the sod. You can lay St. Augustine or plug with St. Augustine any time of the year. I think this will be a warm winter that you can do it in. But what I need you to do is whoever's mowing your lawn, if you're mowing it or your lawn company's mowing it, they need to bag their clippings, okay? And then you can do it little bit by little bit. So you can do it in patches, but I want you to make sure that those weeds are not going to seed, okay? And then if you wanted to, lay the sod, you can do it in February, and that'll be just fine. But go ahead and make sure those weeds are not going to seed. And then you can plug it if you want. I would do sections at a time so that you know you got rid of the weeds in those areas. And again, don't let them go to seed. Okay. Pinky. Good morning, Pinky. Merry Christmas, hon. She is in Coldport, Orange. It's lovely. It's chilly. It's just the right temperatures for shopping for Christmas and getting out there and being festive. So I don't mind it. And the sun's going to shine after the rain goes if you are fortunate to get rain. And it'll happen again next week. We got 2 cold fronts coming through. So is it too late to put either a pre- or post-emergent herbicide down? If so, what should the ingredients be? My dog has these little stickers all over his legs when he comes in from Florida Friendly Native Yard. Thanks for all you do. So I'm either thinking they are Sanspers, which may not be the case since it's a Florida Friendly Yard. It may not be. But then it may also be Biden's beggar ticks. Don't let them go to flower. That's the only thing that's the downside of beggar's ticks, which is a Florida native. We've got to go. Thank you so much, Pinky. Merry Christmas. We'll be back next week. Answer all your gardening questions. Thank you to Renee Wilson for the Audubon Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary, Naples, Florida. Get down there. It's a beautiful, beautiful area park. I've been there. And thank you, Lizzie. Thank you to all our callers.
Yes, thank you to our listeners, our callers, our texters. You guys are superheroes, and you make our job fun. So
there you
thank
go.
You for that.
From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, I'm Teresa Watkins. This is Better Lawns and Gardens. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to us every Saturday morning. I'm Teresa. Let's see. We're going to be great. Merry Christmas, everyone. We'll be back next week.
Yep.
And this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
If you missed any of the show, you can go to betterlawns.com. That's betterlawns.com.